Good morning. Thank you for joining us, especially given what some of you might have had to go through get here this morning. But we're glad you could join us for our review of the first half results, that is the 6 months leading up to 30 September 2010. My name's Tim O'Toole. This is my first opportunity to address you as Chief Executive, and I'm pleased to do it in the context of where we've been able to show further progress, notwithstanding some tough conditions. We've been able to deliver overall results consistent with our expectations, and we've also been able to deliver cash generation beyond our targets. And I think this last goal is largely due to the leadership of Jeff Carr and his team. And one of the things that gives me confidence in taking on this role is the opportunity to work with executives of this caliber. And in that regard, before I go forward, I should say, as a matter of first importance, that I acknowledge and salute, really, the role and the contribution that Sir Moyer Lockhead has delivered to the group, to the industry as a whole over the last 21 years. It's truly a pleasure and a privilege to follow him. Lucky for me, he put together a top management team, so I join with them, and together we're going to try to fill Sir Moyer's shoes. In addition to the team, the other thing that gives me confidence is really the breadth of this enterprise. You know, we have a diverse portfolio of businesses, and where we see softening in one, we're able to lean on the strengths of another to still deliver on our promises as we've and meet our expectations as we've done this year. The other thing that I'm finding encouraging is that over the kind of the first 4 months in this assignment, I've traveled all of our operating properties, and I've been kind of on this extended busman's holiday. And the thing I've learned is, number one, we have literally thousands of people out there who are working very hard every day to do the best they can for their passengers and our customers. But the other thing I've seen is that there's plenty of room for improvement still. We are far from a perfect transportation enterprise with standardized processes. We're far from it in many cases. So this is upside for us. I mean, it's upside in greater efficiencies in the future, but it also is a thing I think that will, as we get better and better, lead us to top-line growth, which has to be a focus of this company. But, of course, those are just impressions and anecdotes. They aren't reduced to hard targets and goals. And we're today getting together to review the actual results. So let me turn to an overview. There has been steady progress in a challenging environment. As you see, we delivered on our expectations, and we've returned earnings growth with EPS up some 16.7% so far this year. And as I said, we've increased cash generation, so much so that we are able to raise our target for the year from 150 million pounds to 180 million pounds. And I really believe that this performance provides an important insight into the strength of this company. Because to be fair, if you think about it, we've taken this company through some of the toughest times, and we still are in some of our business segments, toughest times we've seen in many, many, many years. And notwithstanding that, we have still delivered on our cash targets. Indeed, by the end of this year, this fiscal year, we'll have our debt-to-EBITDA ratio down to 2.5 times. And not many people would have supposed that. And when we drive through that target, we're moving straight on to 2 times, and we're going to get there a lot faster than most people suppose. So I think that to the extent a concern about this company has been its balance sheet, I really think that concern is on its way to being dispelled. I think another drag on the perception of the possibilities for this company, of course, was the specter of the comprehensive spending review. And I join with my peers in saying that we're enormously relieved that the government has shown that they actually get it, that transport has to be protected, because it is one of the key enablers to turning this economy back to growth. So you've seen the commitment to construction and heavy rail. You've also seen that the threatened tax increase on fuel for buses has been much, much less than forecasts. And indeed, as a result, we see no impact from the comprehensive spending review on our results in the near term. We feel we have plenty of time to adjust to the more modest increase in fuel taxes come 2012. I really do think the Secretary of State and the Ministers of Transport deserve a lot of credit for obviously making the case for which I believe our passengers and we are going to benefit. So all in all, with the removal of these major concerns, with our delivery so far this year and an overall basis for the group, the strong cash generation gives us more than enough support for the board's determination to increase dividends by no less than 7% going forward. So all in all, a steady performance, I think. And I'll turn it over to Jeff, who will review the financial highlights, and then I'll come back and give you a review of businesses sector by sector. So, Jeff?
Thank you very much, Tim. And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'll just start by taking a quick look at the summary of the financial performance in the period. Total revenues increased by 4% in the period to just over £3 billion. Now, at constant exchange rates, revenue growth is a little bit more modest at about 1.3% due to the strengthening, slightly stronger dollar this year than we had last year. EBITDA margins advanced slightly, which is encouraging in this environment, up from 10.7% last year to 10.8%, with improved margins at UK Bus, Greyhound and Transit partly offsetting a tougher margin environment at First Student. And operating profits, as you can see, and that's adjusted operating profits before non-recurring and amortization charges, was up 3.5% to £170.6 million. It's pleasing to see our cost of financing, overall cost of financing coming down, and interest costs, as you can see, were down 4% to £92.9 million as we continue to benefit, or really start to benefit from the lower levels of debt. And that means that our profit before tax grew strongly, up 14.3%. To £77.7 million. Now, one of the key features of these results is the significant improvement in the statutory profit before tax, up 187%, you can see there, from £28.6 million to £82 million. And the key issue there being the elimination of any restructuring costs that we had last year and any restructuring charges this year, and we did have some smaller amounts, have just been taken through normal operating costs, and a one-off credit in the period of £22.5 million. The credit related to the settlement of an old Network Rail claim, going back actually to the previous First Great Western Rail franchise from several years ago. Tax for the period was £19.1 million, and that's based on a full-year tax rate, estimated full-year tax rate of 25%, which I think is consistent with what we've been talking about. So overall, as Tim's mentioned, adjusted EPS was up 16.7%, which we think is a good performance on the right track. Now, before we look at each of the businesses in turn, I've just shown here a summary of the bridge from last year to this year's operating profit, split out by the key divisions. And as we've highlighted, student margins being under pressure, operating profit is down year on year by just over £10 million. But this has been more than offset by good profit increases at Transit, Greyhound, and you can see UK Bus. UK Rail's profit is basically flat year on year, which is an excellent performance considering the increase in premium costs that we'd flagged as we went into this year. And in the period, that's about an extra £50 million in terms of premium charges. And group costs were up slightly, £3.6 million, mainly due to low share-based payment costs last year and a more normalised amount in the current period. So moving on to start with student in terms of the businesses and looking at each of the businesses in turn. I'm going to do student, transit and Greyhound in dollars just to take away the foreign exchange and then UK bus and rail back in pound sterling. Student revenues, as you can see, were down 0.9%, just under 1%. And the small decline resulting from, as Tim mentioned, some route consolidations, which we've seen in a number of contracts, which probably accounted for about half of the decline. And also the fact that charter revenue continues to be down year on year, and it was down about 5% in this period versus last year. And in the first half, it represents about 10% of our sales. So again, that's about half a percentage point of decline. EBITDA was $157 million, again, down a little bit from last year, $11 million, due to the revenue reductions that I've just described and also limited pricing opportunities in an environment where the school boards remain under significant budget pressure. Operating profit, therefore, at $40 million, $40 million for the period is down just over $15 million versus last year, which reflects higher depreciation charges in the period as we continue to invest in the fleet. And as previously stated, we expect these margin pressures to continue into the second half of the financial year. Now, the story of transit is somewhat different, with strong revenue growth and good margin development. Revenues were up 5.5% to just under $600 million. and the growth really coming from shuttle and paratransit. In fact, our shuttle business was up just under 25% compared to last year, and paratransit revenues grew strongly also, up 6%, as a result of partly new contract wins and partly expansion of existing business. The fixed route business, which represents more traditional metro transit services, grew at a more modest 1.5%, which again is in line with our expectations. And as I mentioned, as well as the good top-line growth, you can see good margin development there, with operating profit up to $39.6 million, or 6.6% as a percentage of net revenue. Now, looking at Greyhound, we continue to make good progress at Greyhound, and total revenues were up 4%, which include our parcel and food service businesses. Like-for-like passenger revenues were up 1.9%. And we made good margin development based on lower fuel costs and also the fact we continue to look to streamline our fixed cost structures. So, for example, total selling costs continue to decline as we expand internet sales and eliminate commissions. And we also continue to look to reduce our terminal overhead costs. Additionally, we made good progress in Canada in our profit recovery plan for the Canadian business. However, Canadian margins continue to remain below acceptable levels, and there's still a lot more work that needs to be done there. Now, on UK bus, revenues were actually down 2.6%, mainly due to the fact that we continue to manage mileage as we look to protect margins, and total mileage driven in the period was down 6% when compared to last year. Passenger revenue on like-for-like basis has been relatively stable for some time now, and it was at 1.3% for the period, and I'd expect this trend to continue for the balance of the year, probably coming in at between 1% to 2% growth. And margin improvements, you can see, margins were up to 9.7%, operating profit up to $55 million, as we benefit from lower fuel costs and the effect of the mileage reductions. So moving on to UK Rail, as I've mentioned, despite the significant increase in premiums, which were up about $50 million, we're pleased to see that operating profit is broadly in line with last year, at $48.4 million. The premium increases mainly relate to First Great Western, with some smaller increases at First Capital Connect. So the strong operating profit reflected good continued cost improvements and a strengthening of the top-line performance. Now, just looking at the top-line development in a little bit more detail, passenger revenues across all the train operating companies showed good progress in the period. Obviously, there was little pricing in this period, and most of this growth is related to volume gains. First Great Western was up 5.4%, and First TransPennine continued to perform solidly, up 5.7%. And we look forward to the trends. Looking forward, the trends remain encouraging, and prospects for the second half are promising. Now, let me move on to cash flow, which, as you know, is one of the key priorities for the group. Overall, we're very pleased with the performance in the first half. As you can see from the chart, our net cash outflow in the half improved from $93.4 million last year to just under $15.7 million. It would have been good to have got to zero or positive, but we were short a little bit. Now, what's pleasing is that's been achieved while we've been increasing our capital expenditure levels and continue to fund a dividend growth policy. And you can see the key drivers of the improvement have been strong operating cash and good working capital performance relative to last year. And as Tim's mentioned, the strongly cash-generative nature of our business means we're able to increase our full-year target from $150 million of net cash to $180 million. And when we include the disposals proceeds from GB Rail Freight, that means that our total cash available to reduce debt for the year will be over $200 million. Now, just looking at the cash flow in a little bit more detail, and starting with the operating cash flow, you can see there $61 million improvement. The key factor driving the operating cash flow, we had some EBITDA improvement, but obviously is the reversal on the non-recurring items that we discussed earlier, which obviously has an impact on cash. I think most important is we look at the cash generated by operations line, and this is really the true test of the strength of the cash generative nature of the business. And you can see that increased from $164 million last year to just under $300 million in the current period. That's an increase of 80%, and the key driver of that being the working capital change, where we had an outflow of over $100 million last year, and we normally have outflows in working capital in the first half of the year and inflows in the second half of the year. But the outflow this year was only $16 million, giving us a difference of just about £89 million. Now, working capital will remain a priority, and as we make progress in the current period, I'm still confident that there's room for improvement going forward. So I'll just... Now, looking at the uses of cash, just talking about the uses of cash, you can see capital expenditure, as I've mentioned, was up by around about 40% to $147 million in the period. And for the full year, we expect capital expenditure to be around $300 million, which I think is pretty much where we previously guided people to. But that's up almost 50% from last year. And moving on, just very briefly, you can see an increase in cash from the interest and tax charges of $29.4 million. The largest element of this being interest costs related to the timing of bond payments, and this was a one-off, which we'll see a bit of a catch-up in the second half and some offset for that in the second half of the year. And finally, with the proceeds from the sale of GB Rail Freight, you can see the net change in cash of $77.7 million. Now, let me just wrap up with a quick some quick comments on leverage. The strength and diversity of our business means we continue to make good progress reducing our leverage. At the half year, as we've mentioned, net debt to EBITDA was 2.8 times, and we're confident of reaching 2.5 times by the end of the current financial year. In respect to refinancing, we have two revolver facilities, one for $1.5 billion and one for just over £500 million. These are both due in February 2012. And I expect that this refinancing will be complete well before the end of the current financial year. And you can see we have significant headroom at the moment relative to the committed facilities, so we'll probably refinance at a slightly lower level than the current facilities. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'll now pass back to Tim.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm now going to run through the businesses. What I'm going to try to do is just kind of give you some flavor of how I see these businesses, their current situation. It is loaded with some impressions, but also maybe some hints at our aspirations for the future. Following the same order that Jeff followed, we start with First Student. First Student plainly faces the toughest trading conditions. You know the story. It's this cutback in property tax receipts, sales tax receipts in some states has put enormous pressure on these school boards. As a result, we've seen cutbacks. We see because the school boards have consolidated routes. They've cut back their charter business, so that's, you know, fewer trips for the athletic teams, fewer trips to the museum in the middle of the day for the school children, and that has hit us. And it hit us in a year where we had abnormally high number of contract expirations. So it has been a tough situation. Notwithstanding this environment, I remain very bullish about this business. And one of the reasons is, as I spent time with these teams, they aren't just sitting back taking these blows. They're taking the business forward, and they're making sure that they improve the technology and improve the offer that we're presenting to the marketplace so that as this market stabilizes, we are going to be in a position to further extend our leadership in this business. So, for example, if you've heard of our Focus project where we're putting this GPS-based system in our buses. The important thing is that this is no longer an IT project. It's now in over half of our buses. By the end of the next school year, it'll be in all of our buses. And this really is a differentiator for us in the marketplace, I believe, because it isn't just that this tracks the buses. It also generates the driver's payroll, and it creates the reports for the school districts themselves. So why this matters? You're somebody who runs a school district. You're subject to all these pressures, parents calling, complaining, et cetera. And a standard one is the mother who calls up and screams that her child's bus is 20 minutes late every day. I'm going to the school board. I'm going to make your life miserable. With our system, the administrator can call up the reports, could see quite plainly, I can see it was 3 minutes late, ma'am, yesterday. It was on time the next 3 days, et cetera. We make their jobs dramatically easier. And it's because we have this system that I actually believe it will differentiate us. Some other companies will talk about their supplying a GPS system. But everyone I've seen, these off-the-shelf systems, they don't have this integrity. And the most important in terms of the accuracy, because they don't drive the driver's payroll. But the other thing is they don't generate the management reports that actually solve the problems for these people. Another thing this team's trying to do in these difficult circumstances is cast themselves as a solution to these budgetary problems. One of the things we're trying to sell is give us more of the work up the chain of the delivery of this work, and we can save you more money. So, for example, in St. Louis, Missouri, we've gone to the school district and convinced them to allow us to do the dispatching, the routing, something we do in other districts, in addition to providing the transport services. They did that. We were able to save them 20% more on their budget. We have a similar project that was successful in Rochester, New York, where we saved a little over 10%. So the only reason I'm raising these examples is because I do want to depict that this is a team that's determined to raise its profile, its own professionalism, because as this business comes back, I do believe we will extend our leadership. I mean, if you step back and look at this business, we have a strong business with very strong margins compared to other companies. We are many times the size of even our next closest competitor. You know, we're in 42 states. We're in 8 provinces in Canada. So we can't escape the fact that when the market as a whole faces these kind of pressures, we're going to feel them. But we also feel we have a view over this business. We're convinced, as a result of that, that First Student will remain over the long term a source of growth for First Group. We turn to a slightly happier story of First Transit, where we have seen this very steady and strong revenue growth. I mean, this is a business you just have to love. It just keeps growing, just quietly, dependably moves forward. You can see its book of business is already over $1 billion. This is, in many ways, our most entrepreneurial business. I mean, these people run shuttles, they run fixed routes, they run paratransit, they'll run call centers. Basically, they will go wherever and do whatever a government or a company who wants to improve their efficiency in their transportation provision or they want to see innovation, they come to First Transit. Now, this business has been able to resist the budgetary pressures. I know people worry whether you're going to see them in this business, but it's been able to resist them in a more successfully than First Student, largely because they have sold themselves as a solution and also because they have a lot of clients that aren't subject to that problem. We have 2 very prominent examples this year, big success stories. One, a conversion in California, and another, a major private provision of service in Canada. So in Southern California, we've always run, for years, we've run paratransit for the city of San Diego, but also for this catchment area to the north, around Oceanside, called North County Transit District. Last year, the big change was North County Transit District turned over its entire fixed route operation to us, which is quite a coup because I'm telling you, you will not see a better engineering plant in this place, a better fleet. We took over all their employees. We're able to deliver them substantial budgetary savings. And at the same time, we provide ourselves with a very handsome margin. And the neat thing about this story is it's been such a success that these people actually volunteered to appear in videos that we can use as a sales promotion tool to show to their counterparts around the country that this is something that people need to be considering to help solve their budget crises. The other example is we landed a big contract with Fluor to move the oil workers into the oil sand fields in Alberta, Canada. Big contract, very attractive, and I think it's an example of the kind of interesting new businesses First Transit's been able to open up. And as Jeff mentioned, the shuttle business has been a great one for us. I mean, we run shuttles at airports. You get on a bus to go to a rental car company at an airport, you're probably on one of ours. We run a lot of shuttle businesses that have been growing on college campuses. These are big businesses. You know, University of Texas, I think we run about 185 bus fleet that's in service at one time. These are big businesses that's been quite successful. It's very encouraging. I told you I kind of went around to our properties, and one message I got consistently when I went state to state to state is when I'd meet with clients, they on their own kept volunteering that the First Transit people, the professionals, are really at the top level of professionalism in the business. It really emphasized when they have a project where there's got to be delivery, quality has to be there, really First Transit are the people they think about. There are some people who will try to bid under us, but the clients recognize if you don't go with us, you do risk quality. And I think we have 2 examples of how that kind of reputation can reverberate and give you more business with the same client. These are kind of reciprocal situations. Reno, Nevada, we always ran their fixed route network. They recently just gave us the paratransit. Durham, North Carolina, the exact opposite occurred. We always have run their paratransit. They've turned over the fixed route to us. That only happens if you're doing a good job. As I said, this is a business that is very easy to like. Modest capital appetite, and yet is delivering this kind of steady growth for us. Greyhound, as Jeff mentioned, they're in the midst of a very nice turnaround. You know the story. When we took them over, this is a business that I don't think had bought a bus in about 7 or 8 years. It has this sprawling network of neglected terminals and fleet, and it had a small fraction of the passengers that used to use it. So manager recognized, you know, you're going to do something about this. You've got to address it all. You've got to hit the network. You've got to hit the terminals. You've got to hit the fleet. So they really have gone a very long way to accomplishing that. They've stripped out the mileage in their network, condensing down to just the high volume lanes. So the milk runs and the branch lines are gone now. And in the terminals, similarly, they're just cascading down to the least cost solution in the terminals. So with the big terminals, if you don't have sufficient transfer of passengers between buses, you get out of them to smaller facilities. Even at the smaller facilities, if you can, you get out of them and you go to these intermodal facilities a lot of municipalities are providing, or even go to third parties with agency situations, and ultimately you go to curbside pickup. The point is, they're just driving to the lowest, least cost solution. Last year, we got out of 89 facilities. This year, in the first half, we got out of about 57 facilities, and we're just going to keep up this process. Then we come to the fleet. You know, with this fleet that was so neglected, it's pretty hard to put a commercial product out there when it's breaking down on the road. But they knew we weren't going to allow them to go on some capital spending spree with new buses. So instead, they put together a very economical and sensible refurbishment program. We've authorized the refurbishment of some 250 buses. These are rebuilt engines, new transmissions. I mean, this is actually a much more reliable product. This year, we'll do 150 of those buses. This production line in Indiana has been such a success, and the quality of the product has been so good, we'll probably just allow this line to keep running. Because it's really giving Greyhound this new look and its ability to compete. And what's so exciting about this is it's doing this while it's remaining cash generative thus. So it's giving them the time to transform their business model, but at very low risk to the group as a whole. So it's quite encouraging that even in the face of very tough circumstances, they're able to do this. I did spend quite a bit of time with this team in Dallas. And one of the things I found quite encouraging is, though they're absolute zealots about their company and their product, they don't live in a museum. They understand that they're going to have to follow bold change if they're going to have a way forward. And I think there's plenty of evidence you can see that these people are doing just that. You look at the Bolt bus product, which I know you know about, highly successful in the very competitive Northeast market, up against Megabus and the Chinese buses and all the rest of it. Well, now they're taking that business model, internet-based, no cash, no terminals, curbside pickup, and they're marrying it with their brand. So we're going to be unveiling a Greyhound Express in Chicago starting in December, and it's going to be very interesting to see how this further shapes the transformation of the Greyhound business model. Greyhound still faces a really tough market when you consider who their clientele is and who's being hurt the worst in this recession. But the fact of the matter is they're remaining cash generative and they're keeping up the momentum. So it really is quite encouraging. To turn then to UK Bus, you've heard the numbers Jeff reported. This is, you know, a very steady performer. As they ran into the tougher economy through the beginning of this year, they maintained that very tight grip on the network, reducing mileage in response to any reductions in demand. This has been a very prudent strategy. It's the strategy that actually allows you to see this kind of dependable performance. But now that things are loosening up, I do think we have to push ourselves. I do think we have to be sure we're not leaving any growth on the table. We have to be sure that we got this optimum combination of frequency, price, and cost discipline. And so we have to, I think, experiment a bit more and push ourselves. And this experiment can only happen at the local level. And it can only be successful at the local level if you have really good relationships with the local authorities, the PTEs, and the like. Where we have those relationships, we've been able to create growth. We have to just make sure we're taking advantage of all the opportunities that are available in this business and make sure that we're getting all we can out of this business. In London, again, we're just continuing to focus on operational performance. We're quite pleased with our performance in the west side of the city. We still have work to do in the east, although we're still a player there, and I'm pleased that we have landed a number of new routes. Most prominently, TfL just awarded us this Route 25, a major move between Essex to Oxford Circus. So, I mean, you know, we're still there. We're still pushing. And, you know, now we're starting to even turn our attention to the Olympics 2012 because, as you know, we're the major bus provider for that, which will be a great moment, I think, for the company as well as the country. I think when you step back from this business and look at it, you know, First Group comes from the bus business. We're the largest bus company in the U.K. When you combine it with our transit operation in the U.S., I mean, surely we're the leading bus company. But it isn't just about size. It's also about being at the forefront of development so that, you know, you're going to be there in the future. And some things that people don't realize is how far advanced we are in the technical end of things. We're the only company in the world opening up a hydrogen fuel cell depot and bus service here in East London, as well as in Connecticut. We are the only company that's been asked to operate this fast charge electric bus that's in California that the USDOT's made such a fuss over. I mean, these are largely science projects on someone else's dime, but the fact of the matter is we're the ones who are gathering the institutional expertise. So however the markets go in the future, we intend to be there. You know, it's about staying in the forefront of operations and engineering and market growth as we're doing in First Transit. We just have to make sure with this business that we do all that, but we also get all the growth that's available in our traditional business. Finally, UK Rail. You know, this is actually, you know, rail's really been the star of the first half of this year. Very strong earnings. The thing is, we're now starting to see even the better sales of tickets. The advanced purchase of first class is finally returning. The flexible standard fare is returning. So that's all good news. Hopefully, the market will keep in that direction. As you would expect of any good rail business, really focused on operating performance. So First Great Western, First ScotRail, First TransPennine Express, all above 91% PPM. And First Capital Connect above 90%, which is above its target. It's been there for the first half. So that's all quite positive stuff. We are the largest in rail as we are in bus, and we're trying to make sure we leverage that size and that expertise across the business. And so we have an example of that going forward right now. First ScotRail, which was, of course, named Transport Operator of the Year again, had a very successful ticket promotion for over 55s on their network. We're now going to take this nationwide on our networks, and we hope to see that turn out quite well. As you might imagine, rail is very dear to me. I'm lucky enough to join the leading rail company in the UK, and you can rest assured that I hope to do everything I can to retain that description in the years ahead for this business. So let me kind of sum up with an overall outlook. As I said, I think we're in a good position right now. Steady performance, earnings up, EPS over 16%. Strong cash generation, as you've heard. But I think the bottom line is this is a company that's very solid, but it's also got a lot of opportunities for improvement. I hope I've conveyed my excitement about the opportunity to join the group. This is a company that is astride the UK and the US and the transport business. These are places, both of which I've run transport companies. So I really think it's a tailored fit for me, and I'm very excited about this opportunity. And with that, we'll be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Morning, Joe Spooner from RBS. Just a number of questions. Firstly, on the increased cash generation target, you obviously had the Network Rail settlement of $22 million. Does that largely explain the increase that you're talking about there and scope for further improvement as the year progresses? Secondly, on the fuel benefit, I think the benefit for the full year worked out about $100 million. How much of that was delivered in the first half? And then, Tim, there's a couple of points that you made. I think you said that 2x net debt to EBITDA would be achieved faster than people expected. Could you maybe flesh out the thoughts that you're thinking on that front? And secondly, you said that the 7% DPS target, it would be no less than 7%. Just thinking maybe there's a scope to increase the growth that you're talking about on that front.
It all sounds like my question.
Right. I'm happy to defer to you.
Well, the cash, yeah, obviously the settlement with Network Rail was a big part of improving that. But also, I think just generally we're very pleased with the way it's going. So, we're being relatively cautious about the guidance. I think moving up to 180 we feel comfortable with. When you add on the benefits from GB Rail Freight, that means we're over $200 million for the full year in terms of free cash. That's post-dividends, post-capital expenditure. And we're comfortable with that guidance. But that was one of the key reasons, obviously, we were able to increase that. Obviously, we'd been working on that for some time, so it was always in our thoughts that there'd be some sort of settlement. In terms of the fuel, I believe the numbers are more closer to 90 million for the full year once you take into account foreign exchange fluctuations, and was just less than half of that in this period, so probably just under 40 million. And we explained at the time last year that how that would be broken out by division, but also the fact that some of that gets offset by things like pension increase that we've got going through the organisation and various other areas. But the 40 million is mostly in UK bus, Greyhound, a little bit in students and transit, and some in rail as well. So it's spread over those with UK bus and Greyhound getting the lion's share. In terms of the two times, I mean, Tim can answer this if you want to.
As far as the two times, as you can imagine, I've been in this position for 3 days, and so Jeff has his arms right here holding me back. No, I'm not prepared to put a date on it, but it will not be in the long term. It's going to be a lot sooner than that. And as far as the whether there is room for increases beyond the 7%, I mean, we've made the 7% commitment, and that's where we are right now. But I will tell you that I do think a steady dividend and upside in dividend is critical, especially in these kinds of businesses. Because the one thing I've learned in running transport businesses is a risk is always that people will squander capital. And the only way you can maintain a discipline and a credibility with your shareholders, it's really the only way you can have this firm communication with them, is this kind of really dependable with an upward-looking dividend policy. So I'm firmly committed to that kind of profile going forward. Well, we don't have any specific projects or anything to announce. We will keep looking at everything in the portfolio plainly, because we want to make sure that what we have is generating returns for us.
I think just to follow up on that, the reason I highlighted the cash generated from operations line on the cash flow, which improved to just under 300 million, so up 80% from last year, is to highlight the fact that most of the performance is coming from the operations. It's coming from our day-to-day business, working capital, EBITDA. And I think that's what we're relying on to get to the two times. If anything comes above and beyond that in disposals, that will just accelerate the process. And I think we're not talking several years. We're talking in the next sort of 12 to 24 months. That's the sort of time frame. And if we get to 2.5 times, which I'm confident we will by the end of this year, then clearly you can see the trajectory from 3 times in March 2010 to 2.5 times in March 2011. It'll be a challenge to keep that trajectory going, but certainly within 24 months we'll be at that end.
Douglas McNeil, Charles Stanley. On the CapEx guidance for the full year, Jeff, 300 million, I think you said, can you give us a sense for what proportion of that relates to the Focus program? And what I'm driving at is to what extent the US bus business, school bus business, is becoming more capital intensive, or is it not costing much? And a related point, if the refurb program at Greyhound is enabling you to avoid a CapEx spree at the moment, does that mean that there will have to be a CapEx spree at some future point there?
No, I think the CapEx that we've discussed, Focus is relatively small amount of CapEx. I think this year we'll be spending something in the order of 10 million, maybe 10, 50 million dollars, something right. Of that order of magnitude. So it's a relatively small amount. Student, we continue to spend, we've upped our capital this year. Most of the increase in the first half was split between student and UK bus. That's mostly maintenance capital, so that's replacement of existing services as we look to keep the average fleet age at a healthy level. And we have kept both of those fleets at relatively healthy levels. So there's no real need to step up in terms of students. Greyhound, it's been a process since we've owned Greyhound. We have bought a few new buses, and this year we'll be buying, I think it's something like 50 new buses. The refurbishment is just a cost-effective way of extending the life, and we've been on the refurbished buses. They actually look and feel like new.
You couldn't tell the difference between a new bus and that refurbished bus. And give us 5 to 7 additional years.
And then $90,000 per refurb relative to about just under $400,000 for a new bus. So, no, I think there isn't a capex bubble there for Greyhound. What we're doing is we're investing wisely to refresh the fleet over a period of time. And we're doing a similar thing in IT for Greyhound. There needs to be a refresh going on, and we're being very cautious about how much capital we commit to it. But as their EBITDA grows, we'll give them a little bit more. We'll let the dog off the leash a little bit more each time their EBITDA increases.
Damien Burrough, Royal Bank of Canada. Got a couple of questions. First of all, just on the US and North American student bus operations, as you look beyond this year, what becomes the new normal in terms of operating margin within the business? As you seek to, for example, save money for your customers, does most of that saving pass back to the customer, or are you taking some share of that? And then just a second question, both for the North American business and the UK, where are you on labour settlements, labour turnover, and is inflation there still relatively sufficient?
As far as U.S. student and the margins, I mean, obviously one of the things that leads to the results you've seen is that we've been protecting our margin. You know, as the market leader, we feel we have to do that, and we are encountering some extreme behaviors in some of these smaller companies who literally seem to be willing to sign a contract at any price just to have the cash flow to survive another year, and we can't allow that to really drive our business. So we have seen some surrender in our overall margin as a result of things like charter business going away, because obviously that's pure gravy to us when you've got the asset there already. But overall, we're trying to maintain the discipline and really protect the margin a point or two below where it's been in the past, as most shrinkage we hope to see. But it's hard to make real bold predictions in student because, you know, we're still facing this turmoil, and we just have to manage through it. Do you have some numbers on labor settlements?
I don't have anything specific in terms of labor settlements. Oh, in general terms, in the U.S., certainly the settlements are coming in around about 2 to 3%. 2.5%, that sort of level is what we've been seeing, which is a bit more than what we've been getting on the top line in terms of pricing.
But we haven't had a whole lot of settlements recently, and that's why.
Yeah. Well, we can. I mean, it depends, you know, contract by contract. In terms of focus, what that does is drive efficiency in terms of labor, and that's something that we can share. Generally, the sort of examples that we quoted would be examples where most of that gets passed on to the authority. I mean, obviously, we're keen to work with school districts to make sure that we can help them bring their costs down, and that helps the relationship going forward. If we can partner with them and help solve their problems, then that's good for the longer term.
See, the evolution of focus is that ultimately, you know, right now we're a source of information for them, but ultimately it's kind of in the next stage, the tool passes on to them and they're going to have direct access to it. So there'll be transparency in the information. So, okay, you give up some of the power you have, but on the other hand, then you're knitted into their operation. They really don't want to do without you. So we see that's where you have to head, to kind of a transparent relationship where we are both committed to each other long term.
So, Jeff Van Claveren from Deutsche Bank. Tim, looking at first students, the impression I have is despite the downturn, the market's still as fragmented as ever. Is there any evidence of small operators exiting? And just thinking of focus, does that give you a real sort of competitive advantage when you bid for contracts? And my second question on Jeff is just for Jeff. On the pension deficit, would you expect the change from RPI to CPI to have any sort of beneficial impact on your deficit?
On the first one, with regard to the small operators, if you think about how this story has played out and the discontinuous nature of the student market, it's, you know, you go through this bidding season and then you all endure something. And that's where this is really the first full year where it's hitting us and hitting all those small operators. So we are looking to see whether there are opportunities going forward with them, and because we want to make sure that we take advantage of any opportunities in the marketplace. But we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out. I do believe long-term focus will be a differentiator, especially for them, because they're just not going to be able to offer a product like that. On the other side, you have to be realistic, because you know we're not looking to run around and pick up 50 bus operations in the middle of nowhere. They have to be of a size that it really makes sense where we can bring the scale and really generate savings. So we'll see how this school year plays out.
In terms of pensions, we have a slide on page 32 in the appendices, which shows we've actually taken about a 70 million benefit from the change from RPI to CPI, and that affects mostly that affects the rail plans and the local government plans in bus. And the 70 million has gone through equity, but it's been more than offset by a change in discount rates. And effectively, what we're looking at with discount rates down to just about 5% is the gap between discount rates and inflation is really narrowed, which means the overall deficit has remained at about 350 million. So the 70 million basically got wiped out because of the discount rate. But all in all, there's a lot more that we can do and are working on to manage that in the longer term.
Ollie Neal, Goldman Sachs. Two questions. In First Student, would you expect a similar level of margin erosion in the second half to that which you saw in the first half? And secondly, would it be possible to comment on recent revenue trends in Greyhound?
I'll talk about student margins. Yeah, I think the margins will be slightly worse than we've previously been talking about. We've previously been guiding people to about a 50% margin decline. I think we're now looking at something like 50 basis points margin decline, something like more like 100 basis points. Now, that difference is $10 to $15 million difference in terms of the EBIT. So it's a manageable level. The key driver for that is the fact that charter revenue continues to decline. Now, we can, to some degree, offset that by our efforts, but we have seen in the start-up of the new school year a continuation of that trend, which is a bit disappointing. In terms of Greyhound?
As far as Greyhound revenues, overall, like-for-like revenue is up about 1.9%, but there's a lot of mix in there. One of the things is the performance in Canada is masking some of the progress they're making in the U.S. They have not yet, because regulatory issues, stripped out the mileage in Canada that they have in the U.S., and that's the next step. We've got to get there, because right now it's a drag on their overall operations. You have these very different markets that Greyhound's in the United States. The Mexican market's been down some, and that in the past has been a source of a lot of growth. Culturally, in Mexico and in the border, it's all about buses. That's a major form of transport. And Greyhound has suffered some reductions in the Northeast. Not Bolt's done very well, but Greyhound itself. But overall, about a 1.9% increase.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're seeing continuing through the second half, something of that order of magnitude.
Tim Barrett, JP Morgan Cazenove. Two quick things. Firstly, in terms of US student, do you feel that any of that charter reduction is structural in terms of it not coming back, or is it purely a cyclical impact that you're planning on? And just also, is there anything to add on rail from the government spending review? Thanks.
As far as the cyclicality of charter, we think it is cyclical. But more importantly, we think it's incumbent upon us to up our game. Because in too much of our operation, the way charter works is you have a person sitting there and they answer a phone. Oh, you want a bus? Fine. And now what we're going to is putting a resource out there to actually drive charter. Because we don't have to just do the museum run. We can also do the local bowling club and a lot of other things. So we're putting in targets, incentive targets for our local managers to get them to turn their attention actively so that we can drive the charter market rather than just wait for the school districts to hand it to us. As far as rail, we hear rumors of further announcements, but we wait to hear from the government first. Rail pricing? We don't have anything to say beyond the government announcement of RPI plus 3 in 2013, I guess it is, going forward, and RPI plus 1 now.
Joel Koo from Arbuthnot Securities. A couple of questions. Firstly, you talked about having in school bus an abnormally high number of renewals or contracts coming up for renewal this year. I mean, what does that profile look like last year? What does that profile look like going into the new year? And secondly, in Greyhound, you talked about exiting what sounds like a rather large number of properties. Have you been able to release any capital as a result of that, or are they just leased properties, and should we expect that as being an opportunity as that process seems to continue?
As far as contract renewals, this past year the total was something like 20% above normal, and this year it's more at normal levels. so we see a little less vulnerability than we faced last year. As far as Greyhound, yeah, some of them are leased properties, some of them are owned, and we do release them as the opportunity presents itself, but I don't want to get ahead of ourselves and, you know, offer some big number.
It sounds a lot, but actually relative to the total size of just under 800, it's a relatively small amount, maybe about 15% over the last year and a half. We have seen some value come through in terms of cash from some of those, but they've been relatively small properties to date. You know, we've talked about some bigger properties in the pipeline. We've talked about that in the past. There are still some exciting opportunities, and I think there will still be some opportunities to unlock some of the potential for the bigger properties. But we don't want to do that until the timing is right, until the property market can give us full value for those. And as you know, it's been a pretty tough market for the last year or so.
Oh, hi. Yeah, it's Joel Cobarton here from Nomura. Yeah, just on UK bus profits, is seasonality this year kind of going to be similar to what it has been previously? Secondly, just on charter revenues, I think that used to be about 7-8% of overall revenues out in school bus. Can you just tell us where we are now? I suppose the last thing, just on London bus, I've always thought that margins have been kind of a bit lower than what the sector averages have been. Is there anything from, you know, obviously having a good look at it, that says that this shouldn't go back to kind of sector average margins at some stage?
Thanks. Let me just cover the seasonality in the charter. Yeah, UK bus is seasonal in terms of most of the profit come through in the second half. The way the fuel hedges roll off, we have a little bit more benefit in terms of fuel in the second half relative to the first half. So we'll, you know, we've given pretty clear guidance in terms of total expectations. So we'd expect our second half profits to be a bit more advanced relative to last year than the first half was. And in terms of charter, it is still around about just under 8%, 7-8% of total. That number hasn't changed significantly. In the first half, it tends to be higher because you've got lower school revenues, basically because of the summer holidays. So it's around about 10% in the first half, and a bit lower in the second half. And it was down, I think, last year, just in the low double digits in terms of the declines. What we're seeing this year is a further 5% reduction in terms of charter. And that's split between school charter and commercial charter. And as Tim was saying, I think our challenge is to drive the commercial charter and reverse those trends and work harder with a better, a clearer sales and marketing offering.
As far as bus margins go, it is an intriguing area, let me just say that. When you look at the available data, our margin is better than most of our competitors. It's not as good as another one. Some of these data are quite suspect, and we don't want to conclude too much, but on the other hand, we don't want to be defensive, and maybe there is more opportunity. Maybe if you push so much on revenue per mile, you're actually not exploiting the revenue, the margin you could drive if you could increase your load. And so I think we have to push ourselves, and we have to test that thesis. And if some people have some better techniques that work locally, I'm more than happy to embrace them. And I think, as I said, we need to push ourselves in this business. It's a good, steady business, so it's the perfect kind to push harder on.
Yes.
Yeah, Damien Burr, RBC again. Just a question on rail. You've got three franchises with between them 15 to 17 months or so left to run. And given the government has yet to decide what future franchises even look like, how do you position yourselves into that environment?
Well, we're, as you might imagine, we're positioning ourselves to be able to respond however the government plays this, including working with the government, putting in our feedback on how we think the best way forward is for the refranchising. Plainly, as you would expect, we're all for much longer franchises. We think to the extent you can get to much longer time for these franchises, you have a better chance of building a business, you know, working with your employees, getting them to identify your goals, all the rest of it. But, you know, we are anxious not to get ahead of the government and be certain we respond to, in a public way, respond to what they bring forward. Your question, however, I mean, hits a key point, and that is they have an enormous amount of work in front of them. And therefore, if there are ways we can help them by
moving these franchises forward in an efficient arrangement, we're all for fostering those for the talks.
Yeah, it's not just the first group that has significant renewals. It's quite a backlog building up, starting to bottleneck building up.
So Paul Butler from Macquarie. Just two questions. Could you give us an idea of where the margin is in the greyhound business in Canada relative to the U.S.? And just if you could talk a little bit more in detail about why the Canadian business has been so much worse than the U.S. business, and you know what the prospects are for turning it around. And then secondly, I just wonder if you give us a sense of you know where you think we might be in terms of school budget issues. You know whether we're still on the way down, or we've bottomed out, or maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Talk about Greyhound Canada. We said last year Greyhound Canada lost pretty much close to $20 million Canadian dollars. And if you back out, the U.S. margins were actually pretty good in a difficult year. The target really was to get them close to break even this year. I don't think they'll quite get there, but I think they'll show significant improvement. Clearly, that's a one-year target. Our longer-term target is they've got to return their cost of capital, like all of our businesses. The reason, one of the key reasons Canada's a little bit different is it's a regulated market, and because it's regulated, it's much more difficult to flex the capacity with demand. So we've been running a lot of buses through a lot of empty space with not many people on them, and we've been in negotiations with each of the provinces to basically come to the party and work with us to make that service work. We were quite hopeful that there's a federal working group that has been working on it and that they'd come up with recommendations. We were expecting the recommendations in September because the provinces and the federal authorities do recognize there's an issue in Canada. Unfortunately, that study has been delayed. I think all of the provinces have to agree the outputs and they're still discussing it. So until we see the outcome of that, I think that's going to be one of the key issues that determines our strategy going forward in Canada in terms of the volume, the level of service, and subsidy. So that's clearly one of the key issues in Canada. Obviously, we can do a lot to manage our own costs, which we need to do as well. And I think, you know, we're determined to get Canada up to an acceptable level of return on capital.
As far as where we might be, you want to follow up?
Yeah. We're
either going to see subsidies or we need to exit.
If we exit, it'll be exiting specific provinces probably and keeping a West Coast and East Coast operation. Most of the subsidy requirement that we need, and that's what it's all about at this stage, is in the central provinces.
And as you know, 80% of that population is within 200 miles of the border, so there is a profitable business there. But what you can't be doing is running buses all up through Saskatchewan, and that's what has to be changed. As far as where we might be on school buses, as you might imagine, 3 days into the job, I'm not yet in a position to call market changes. We just need to keep working this problem. And the other thing about school buses, as I said, it's this discontinuous nature. We've got to go through next year's bidding season before really anything intelligent can be predicted for the future.
Any final questions?
No? Okay. Thank you very much for coming here and joining us this morning.
This now concludes our call. Thank you all very much for attending.